COO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, December 17th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gunathchi. Shawa Toksunusum Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us on our live stream over on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. On the show today, tomorrow night, Thursday, December 18th at the Crystal Saloon, is Holiday Jazz and Classics, a benefit for the upcoming third annual Juno Jazz Fest. The show features headliners Eddie Barbash and Kyle Thade. We'll chat with them about the show happening tomorrow. The holidays are a great time for giving, and St. Vincent de Paul's Adopt a Family program is one way you can do just that. We talk Adopt a Family plus some extended thrift hours for your holiday shopping needs. Those conversations plus more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Keishi Bessie Cooley. And the word this week is Ketladi.
Ketladi.
That means seagull. And here's a sentence.
Ketladi dok kadach kanas hitch yest kuahai.
The seagulls fly out of the interior when fall arrives. Let's hear it again.
Ketladi.
Seagull. Gunas Chief Chene Lance Twitchell, Goldbelt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Keishi Bessie Cooley is Koketan and a child of a Yenyedi man. She is from Daisleen, Teslin. She earned a master's degree in Indigenous Languages and Linguistics from Simon Fraser University and interviewed many speakers for the Hashagun language series.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Okbay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. I have in the studio with me now a gentleman by the name of Dr. Tim Quigley Peterson. He has been a longtime doctor here in Juno, and we are going to be talking about a couple things today, but we're really going to be talking about, and you're going to have to help me pronounce this name quickly because I'm not sure. I'm going to give it a shot. Buprenorphine.
Buprenorphine.
Okay, buprenorphine.
Buprenorphine.
Okay. Great.
Which is a generic for Suboxone, which a lot of people have heard of.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show. Gunath Cheese for being here. I'm really excited
to be here. Yeah.
We had Andrew on from CCFR a couple weeks ago, and they were at Public Market, and he teased us with this idea about these programs that are coming up. And so you're here to tell us a little bit about that. So first of all, let me just ask you about your background. Tell me about you and your work here in Juno over the years.
Like a lot of people, I came here in the summer of 89 just to fill in for a few months because it was cruise ship season, which was nothing then compared to now.
Yeah.
And just
1.7.
And everybody else who worked there wanted to climb mountains when the weather was good.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for a while, and I slowly was here more and more. Then I moved here like a lot of other people.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so what kind of work did you do here?
Emergency medicine. I was a doctor in the trenches at Bartlett since 89. Yeah.
Wow, okay. And so there's this new program that is going to be happening. Tell me a little bit about that and how we got here.
Okay, right. Well, so we have a whole new approach that's been done all over the country on how we can actually engage addicts and get them into treatment. I just throw some numbers at you. because we're really frustrated at the fire department when we go to someone's house and the police or the friends gave them Narcan and they don't want to go to the hospital. Mm. But they're in a bad mood because we just gave them opioid medicine reversal agent. So they breathe and they're alive, but they're in withdrawal.
Mm.
So they feel just terrible. And a lot of times they don't want to go to the hospital. They've been there before. There's a lot of bias in our system. We have good people who work there, but sometimes some of them haven't been treated well in the past. So they just stay home and stay with their friends. And if you stay with people who use, then you'll keep using.
Mm.
So what we're focusing on is the people who get Narcan from somebody, even, or it could be from us too, because we do carry it. If somebody wakes up and they're in that state, we want to engage them and say, hey, what if we can give you something we put in your mouth? It dissolves in 3-4 minutes, like a lot of medicines do these days. And within 10 or 15 minutes, you won't be in alcohol withdrawal.
Oh, interesting.
Like, Then we get a set of vital signs and whatnot. And if they agree, and the thing has basically no side effects, and then we talk to them again in 15 minutes. And in 95% of cases, this is nationwide, these people are all of a sudden not in withdrawal. Okay, now how would you like to talk about not running from addiction, which is what 90% of addicts are doing. They're running from withdrawal, not addiction. So what we want to do is be able to engage them and then work with the case management at the hospital and our mobile integrated health team to have somebody come back and check in on them. But here's why this drug is really, really cool. That's like your favorite word is cool. This is super cool because it is a narcotic, but it displaces narcotics that are on receptors and it stays there for 48 hours.
Okay, so explain that a little bit more for me.
So if you take heroin or fentanyl, it just grasps on these receptors in your nervous system, okay?
Okay.
And Narcan takes them off. But when it takes them off, then all of a sudden your body goes wacko and you get pain, itching, nausea, vomiting, irritability. I mean, you're in narcotic withdrawal, and it's awful. So we can reverse that in 15 minutes with an oral agent with no needle. It doesn't taste bad. And they're basically protected for the next 48 hours if they use. And then during that interval, our goal is to use mobile integrated health, case management, and our addiction partners at Search to try and plug people into therapy.
Into recovery,
right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Or into therapy and recovery.
Therapy and recovery.
So here's
yeah.
some numbers of the if one person wakes up with Narcan, their chance of dying in the next 48 hours is 4%.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So that's pretty huge. But the other number is if you have 100 people who wake up with Narcan, 25 of them will be dead in a year if they're not in treatment. These are huge numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have tools that don't involve shame. That we can engage people who are someone's mother, father, brother, sister,
right,
and get them into treatment and get them back rolling. And the nationwide data has shown that if they don't do anything, 5 to 6% of them will be in some kind of therapy or treatment in a year. If we do this, that number goes up to 25%. So if you go get sent away to one of those $30,000 programs down south where you're in boot camp for 6 weeks or whatever they do to you, the success rate at a year is 17 to 20.
Hmm.
And that's super expensive and you're sent out of state. Mm-hmm. And we now have really good resources in Juneau, especially the Search people have several addiction experts over there, including some people down at Front Street. So we want to capture these folks, many of whom are middle-class people. You'd be surprised how many people are using this stuff. It is not just people sitting on the street.
Well, we've had JPD on, and we know that fentanyl is a huge issue here in Juneau.
Right. Well, and fentanyl has changed things because with heroin, people used to shoot it with. But fentanyl, the Chinese, in their wisdom, working with the bad guys in South America, figured out how to make a way to have it oral.
Mm.
So you can just take a pill. But the thing is, you don't know what's in it. There's a lot of dirty drugs out there.
So where did this say it for me again.
Buprenorphine. Yeah.
How did this come about, and is this a newer thing?
We started doing this in the ER, and it was very controversial during COVID, partly to keep people out and partly just to engage them. And the very first time I gave this stuff to somebody in the ER, one of the nurses, you're just enabling them because we have a bias against – people with some of these, you know, addiction orders. And 15 minutes later, this guy was smiling and happy and chirpy. And she's like, holy, what is that stuff? Mm. Because she didn't even know what it was. And she's a really good human. It just, it, you know, she's, in that day, was burnt out on dealing with the revolving door of some of these folks. So if you can engage them and get them in treatment, and treatment could be full abstinence. It could be being on long-term agents. This stuff is used for long-term therapy. And so SEARCH, they have a clinic where there are all kinds of options that they have to get people treated for these addictions and get them engaged in life, to work, to pay taxes, et cetera.
So how did buprenorphine not become the leading thing as opposed to Narcan, let's say?
Well, because it doesn't reverse like Narcan. Narcan's a breathing drug. So okay. When you get too much opiates, too many opiate receptors in your nervous system covered, you stop breathing. And then you have a cardiac arrest subsequently. Oh, okay. That's the order of business. So it's a breathing medication. And this is this wouldn't do that.
So I see.
Narcan, naloxone is a reversal agent. This is a treat withdrawal agent.
Ah, I see. Okay. So it seems to be the fact that it protects against OD for the next 24 to 36 hours. You're all hoping that gives you that window,
to engage with them.
Yeah.
And our community health team, they know a lot of these folks. They know they live in cars. They know they're homeless. They know they live under a bridge. They'll go to them and just with no shame, no blame, hey, can we help you? We're willing to deliver this stuff every 36 to 48 hours for two or three doses until they can get engaged with the walk-in people at SEARCH or get an appointment with an addiction doctor.
I see. So is CCFR going to be – is this a new program that they're instituting?
This is a new drug that is going to be released to our medics in the next couple of weeks. It's not out there yet. And we're wanting to do is let people know what we're up to, because this includes people who might be listening who have siblings or parents who use and who don't want them to stop, and then to know that there are resources in this community – including our, you know, MIH program. They just call the fire department downtown and ask how to get in touch with them.
Yeah, so you can call the fire department. And is this going to be something that, you know, a lot of people, at least from what I know, I'm not an expert, of course, and I don't know how this works, but some people have Narcan at the ready, right?
That's correct. They do, which is great. We have it. That saves lives. But it doesn't stop people from using. It just saves their life that day.
Right.
But the people who take too much are in a much higher risk category than the average users.
Is this
buprenorphine?
Thank you. Is this going to be something BP? We got to call it something shorter.
Yeah,
we need to come up with a nickname.
That's fine with me. Well, we call it BUP.
BUP. Okay.
Yeah.
So is this something that folks who might be able to have Narcan on hand could also have this on hand, or is this something that has to be
done? No, this is a prescription drug.
Okay.
And that would not be appropriate.
Okay, okay.
I don't think. I mean, on the other hand, some of the people who thought this was a bad idea said, they might just sell it to their friends who then won't be withdrawing. And you know what the addiction experts say? Fine.
Yeah.
Let them have it. It'll keep them alive.
Interesting.
And it'll keep them from potentially using. And we're not just doing this de novo. I mean, I was at a conference of the National Association of EMS Physicians in San Diego a year ago, and I went to a whole afternoon, three different presentations on this. There are about 200 fire departments in the country doing this.
Mm.
So this is not new. We're just bringing a standard of care to Juneau.
I see. Okay. So this is going to be something that is rolling out over the next...
We hope to roll it out. We're trying to roll it out before Christmas. There's a couple little parts we have to get together. We're scheduling time with each of the individual shifts. We had a paramedic refresher 2 weeks ago, and where we talked about this at length with the medics who are leaders of their teams.
Yeah.
So, but we want to make sure we have our ducks in the row before we pull the trigger.
Sure, absolutely. Well, this seems like something fantastic for the community, and hopefully can help those in need. So if you are listening and you know somebody who might, or yourself, you know, you might be in trouble, this is an option, right, as a way to...
It's also an option that they can walk into the SEARCH it's called the OTP clinic. It's open every day. I don't know the hours.
Yeah.
But you can walk in and see a provider without an appointment. Now, if there's someone ahead of you, you might not get in.
Right.
So I can't speak for them, but it does exist here. So that resource is out there, too, for people listening who have someone who's using, who don't want to wait for that time when they took too much.
Right. But this is something that people can know about, can ask about, ask the CCFR if they are dealing with somebody who has addiction.
Well, yeah, or it would be the mobile integrated health people. And
right.
They're talking with the search people right now. So if there's a doctor, there's a long-acting form of this stuff that lasts a month. But
oh,
it costs $2,000, so we can't afford to carry that. It's not in our belly whack to do that.
Yeah.
But if a search doctor prescribes it, we can deliver it. Like, our guys can go give the shot. Not the paramedics you call for 911, but the mobile integrated health people.
Mobile integrated health unit. Right. And you can probably put that into your favorite search engine, mobile integrated health unit, Juno, and find information.
Or is there a website? CCFR website has information about it.
Yeah. Okay. Best is to go to CCFR website. Dr. Peterson Quigley, thank you so much for sharing this information. I'd love to have you and the folks from CCFR back again when this is in play and see what maybe some of the results are.
Yeah, well, once we roll it out, then we can give a better perspective of how it's working and what our barriers are and what our successes are. It'd be fabulous.
That'd be great. Thank you so much for coming in today. Gunath Cheesh for being here. I really, really appreciate it. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Up next, we'll talk about holiday jazz and classics happening tomorrow night at the Crystal Saloon.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha anikak, gunish cheese. Thank you.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I am your host, Boston Christopher. That right there is a track called Night and Day. It's from an album called For Murray and Lillian. It features Eddie Barbash and Kyle Fade. And if you like the sound of that, well, you're going to want to get yourself down to the Crystal Saloon tomorrow night. It's the holidays are here, and at the Crystal tomorrow, you can hear some magical tunes with holiday jazz and classics featuring Kyle Fade, Eddie Barbash, plus Taylor Dallas Vidic, Franz Felkel, and more, who we have a full bevy of folks in with us today. It's all a benefit for the upcoming third annual Juno Jazz Fest happening later. Is it later this winter, Michael? Is that when it's happening? Is it February?
Jazz Fest, yeah, will be February 4th through 7th.
February 4th through the 7th. And so this concert is going to be featured as a benefit for that festival. So let's start with you, Michael, because I know you got to jet out of here real quick. So tell me a little. This is going to be the third Juno Jazz Fest. So how did Juno Jazz Fest come about?
Well, Juno Jazz Fest, I was a middle school teacher for 16 years here in Juneau, and a number of times I would bring my jazz bands down to the Sitka Jazz Festival. Mm-hmm. And Bob Athade was the remarkable teacher that would come as a guest clinician there. I was so impressed with that. Then Kyle started bringing his band and friends and blew my mind. And then when the Sitka Jazz Festival ended 4 years ago, after a 25-year run, I think, Brian Van Kirk and myself and Sandy Forche realized we really wanted to keep this going for the young people and for the community. And so Kyle was all over it, huge amount of work and support to bring what had been the Sitka Jazz Festival to Juno. And so it's a collaboration between Juno Jazz and Classics and the Juno School District.
Okay.
So schools from right now around Southeast, but we're hoping to get more from around the state in years to come. Great experience for the community, for kids, and for the local musicians.
And is there a website for the group? Can you put that
there
out there?
There is, yeah. It's Juno Jazz and Classics Jazz Fest, and I don't know that I don't have it off the tip of my tongue.
Oh, is it on the main Juno Jazz and Classics
it
website?
Is.
Okay,
it
so
is.
You can go to Juno Jazz and Classics
and then click on Jazz Fest,
and then you can find the Jazz Fest link because it's a collaboration, right?
It is, exactly.
So that's kind of cool. That's awesome, and so this is going to be the third annual version of that, which mm-hmm. is just fantastic. I love that it involves kids, right? I love that mm-hmm. it involves kids, and I know that I think Kyle, when you were here. For this, I think that's the last time you were here was for the second annual Juno Jazz Fest, right? Was that when
yes,
you were here?
Yep, this last February.
I remember we had Eddie in here, we had the whole band, we had drums. It was like the biggest group we've ever had in the studio. And I was
right.
like, is this going to work? And it did. It was so great to have you all in here because I know that your work involves obviously playing the music, but also education, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We were actually just over at Juno Douglas this morning working with the students in their jazz band.
I love that. See, that's so fantastic. And Papa Athade, Bob.
Yes.
I like to call him Papa. I don't know why.
You can't just, call me whatever you want.
It's all good. So you've been going to Sitka for years, is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah, I've been going. I was going to the Fine Arts Camp from 2001 till 2016 and the Jazz Festival from 2002 until it ended.
And I see.
Mike Busey actually was at our home in the summer, and he and Kyle started talking about this, and I think they got real serious in November, and in February they pulled off the first Juno Jazz Festival. Very incredible.
Awesome. That's so cool. So that's great. So, Michael, I know you have to take off, but I just wanted to say, is there anything else you wanted to say specifically about the Juno Jazz Fest?
Come to the Juno Jazz Fest. It's fantastic. Kyle's going to be bringing his band. Martina Da Silva and Jacob Mann are going to be there playing. I look at the Jazz Fest as a three-legged stool, as it's about students, and that's in spades. I've just seen the impact that especially Bob and Kyle and the musicians they bring have on music students here in the here and around the state. It's also about the community providing multiple really world-class performances of jazz. And then it's also about the local musicians, getting them involved. And so we start off Jazz Fest with the Jazz Ramble, with local bands playing downtown at clubs, and we hope everybody will come out for that. That'll be Wednesday night, February 4th. But we appreciate all the businesses that have been supporting the Jazz Fest. Multiple businesses and individuals have donated. And if you can make a donation, we'll be soliciting those tomorrow night at the concert. And no offense, it just takes money. And, and then
I'm in public radio. I don't know anything about that. Yeah.
We don't have federal funding either. But, anyways, we'll be soliciting for donations, and we really appreciate all the donors who have been giving. And by the way, tomorrow night's concert is sponsored by a very generous gift by Tracy's Crab Shack.
Okay, excellent. That's great. And of course, we'll probably have you back on the show later at the end of January to talk about Juno Jazz Fest happening. So let me introduce everybody else that's in the room today. Michael, thank you so much for being here. So we heard a little bit there from Kyle Athade. He's been on the show a couple times. Kyle Athade Dance Party has been in Juno over the last couple of years a few times. And also, good to cheese for being here, Kyle. Really appreciate seeing you again.
Of course. Always happy to be here.
And then Bob Athade, or Papa, as we like to call him. You can just shout that out tomorrow night at the concert and be like, hi, Papa, you know.
Okay, it's all good. But when you shout it out, have a $100 bill in your hand.
That's right.
And then you can even come up and play on the piano with me.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, no, that's for real.
Yeah. Oh, that would be good.
You got some money, you get to come play the piano with me.
Awesome. Okay, that's great. And I think that's fantastic. I'm sure there's somebody in Juno who's going to take you up on that, if I know my Junoites. And then I also have Kyle, your sister is here as well, Eliana, right?
Yes.
And you play as well.
Yes, I play the bass.
You play the bass, the stand-up bass?
Yes, and the electric, I will be playing stand-up bass tomorrow night.
You know, here's what I say every time I have a bass player on the show, because to me, I always thought bass players were the coolest one in the band.
That's right.
And see, you disagree with me, right? Instantly. I just don't know why, but they are always the coolest people in the band.
Well, and they can meet her tomorrow night, and she got off the road on tour with a group called Waxahachie that she used to play with. And they were opening for Sheryl Crow, who Ellie is already friends with, and she was opening for Willie Nelson and Bob
Dylan.
Friends
is a strong word, but I did see Bruce
Springsteen.
Let me pick
those names up off the floor.
Yeah.
So, you know, there you go.
I love that. Papa Thade with the glow up for you, right? I mean, come on, let's
go.
And Eliana, how long have you been playing the bass?
I've been playing the bass for, since I was 11, and I'm about to be 35. I keep on wanting to say for, I don't know, 10 years, but it's a lot more than that.
Those years are ticking by. I totally understand that. And then also in the room, I have the one and only, the fantastic, the wonderful Taylor Dallas Vittick. Gunna the Cheese for being here. Grab that mic in there.
Grabbed.
Gunna the Cheese, how are you?
I'm so excited for this week and tomorrow night.
Yeah. And you just got back from Anchorage as well, right? Mm-hmm. You were doing some concerts up there?
Yeah, I did some holiday jazz up there and excited to be in Juno doing holiday jazz at home this week.
That's fantastic. That's going to be so cool. So, let's talk about tomorrow. There's two shows. One's already sold out. These are at the Crystal Saloon. You can go to thecrystalsaloon.com, I believe, their website, and you can get tickets and all information for show times. You added a show because the first one sold out so quickly, which is pretty cool. Is that right, Kyle?
Right. So the first show was the only one we were planning on doing, and we've got the string quartet and Taylor and everything. It was the whole big production, and then it sold out so quickly we thought, we have a lot of people who want to get there and hear something, so we're going to make a second show. And it actually works out really nicely because the first show, having the string quartet, is sort of the classic side of jazz and classics. And then the second show being the later set where it's the jazz group by itself is the jazz side.
Well, I mean, jazz is all about sort of improv anyway, a little bit, right? I mean,
that's right.
I mean, so just saying, hey, let's add a show and we're just going to jam, right? And some world-class musicians having some fun at the Crystal Saloon sounds like a pretty good time.
Yeah.
So what can we – so to go back, though. Tell me what we can expect. You're talking string quartet in the first show.
Right. So Eddie Barbash, our guest saxophonist, loves – all sorts of beautiful orchestrated music, and he especially loves the old crooners who he sang with these full orchestras. So he came up with this concept for a group that was a jazz quartet of saxophone, guitar, bass, drums mixed with a string quartet, two violins, viola, and cello.
Ooh.
So we're taking the music for that group, and we're exchanging the guitar for the Papa Thade piano, and we're going to play that music. I write all the arrangements for it.
Okay.
And it draws on all these different influences of mariachi music, crooners, classical music, Fats Domino, jazz, opera, any number of things. Eddie's into it. And, of course, a little bit of holiday music. And the second set is going to be the jazz portion of the group without the strings, because the string players have to get to bed to teach in the morning. But we're going to have guests throughout the night. Taylor's going to be singing a bunch of songs. We just had a rehearsal today, and it was super fun. And we have some other guests who I think it's safe to announce that Ed Littlefield is going to be sitting.
Ed's in town, too?
Oh, yeah, Ed
awesome.
Is in town.
We love that.
So we're going to have Ed do a little bit with the string group as well as with the second set. And maybe we'll get Mike Busey to get his trombone out. We have a lot of people planned to sit in with us.
Oh, that sounds like a really fun evening. It's all going to support Juno Jazz Fest coming up in February, which is pretty cool. So what kind of tune, what am I trying to ask here? I guess it's the idea of like holiday tunes, right? You said there'd be a couple holiday tunes. And are those already jazzy, or do you have to like arrange them to make them a little bit more jazzy and fit with the players that you have?
It varies. So, for example, with the strings, I have two songs that I'm arranging. One of them is O Holy Night, which is not typically a jazz song.
Mm-hmm.
So then I had to come up with ideas of how to implement the rhythm section and make it have a groove to it. But then the other one is actually a really beautiful, obscure song that Judy Garland sang called Merry Christmas. And not to be confused with Have Yourself a Merry Christmas. This one is originally just Judy Garland with strings and a keyboard.
Oh.
So then I'm doing a little bit of a transcription of that and a little bit of adding the rhythm section to do more jazz stuff. So different Christmas songs have different applications. Most of what we're doing with Taylor are songs that are typically played in a jazz setting, although there are a couple where she's got some pretty inventive arrangements on how to sneak them into the jazz format.
I love that. And Taylor, what's the experience been like to work with the Thades, I guess we'll say, in terms of, you know, the rehearsals you've had so far and the – because it's really nice when you get to cross-pollinate and work with folks who don't necessarily live here. And then so it kind of adds to the experience a little bit.
Yeah, and there's such a shared language in jazz. So we just had the one rehearsal earlier today, and tomorrow night we're going to do it on stage, which sounds kind of nutso. but that's also just how it works, because you can describe the intro and the ending that you want. And I kept listing off songs and keys, and everyone just started playing the songs in those keys because they're just up in their brains somewhere, which is what's nuts about instrumentalists. So it was super cool today to just list off songs and keys and say go, and we made some music about it.
So what are you going to be – what are we going to be hearing from you tomorrow?
Mostly classics.
Okay.
With, you know, we got to do a little Grinch in there too. Uh-huh. Keep it spicy. some Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Yeah.
We taught Papa Thade a new Christmas song today. And if you want to find out what it is, I'd say buy a ticket to the sold out show, but it's sold out. So maybe come to the late show and we'll do a reprise. We'll see
and,
what happens.
And shout, with the $100 in
with
hand.
With the $100 bill.
Yeah, right? I mean, there you go.
Get out another 100 and who knows what could happen.
Yeah, who knows what can happen. Because, again, it is a benefit. I just want to make that clear. It is a benefit. But it's also really nice that you all are taking the time to come to Alaska at the holidays. And where are you all? Are you all live in the same place now? Or do you all in different places? Where do you all live?
So Papa and Kyle, if they live in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay.
And Ellie.
I live in Los Angeles, but I would really like to live in Southeast Alaska. Nice. I love it here. I love you people.
I have a second for you to live here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we welcome you in already. You're more than welcome.
Thank you.
It's so great. So, Bob, I want to ask you, when you were – you have two fascinating, talented children here.
I've got two more also.
And you have two more. And are they also musicians?
Yeah. The oldest is the concertmaster of the Rochester Philharmonic in New York, in Rochester, New York, and she teaches at the Eastman School of Music, violinist. And the second one's a cellist, but she does something else for a living. So all four are musicians.
So did you consciously think about that as you were raising your children? I mean, were you playing music for them at the beginning?
No. Well, so what happened was my wife's a violinist and a pianist, and she taught violin. So people came over for violin lessons, or they came for me for trumpet lessons and jazz piano. So the kids went, well, I'm going to do this or that or the other. And they all started on violin, and then they all went off to other instruments. So they play multiple instruments, but you will find Ellie most of the time on bass and Kyle most of the time on vibraphone, piano, drums, you know, a bunch of stuff. And so anyway, it was... it's nurture and nature, right? So the nurture is what's in the environment at home, and the nature is just what's in them. And so they're all very good musicians, but they all have kind of different specialties in a way.
That's so fascinating. And I'm just curious, before we let you all go, when you were kids, Ellie and Kyle, did you reject the music at first because your parents were both, you know, teaching and stuff? And you're like, I want to do something different. I don't want to play the violin, you know, how some kids do. And then you came around, or what was your story? Ellie, we'll start with you.
Okay, thank you so much for asking, because, yes, I'm a horse girl. I'm a proud horse person my whole childhood. I'm the youngest of the family, so I was like, no way.
Rejection.
I did it, but I was very like, I'm going to be a vet or something.
Right.
And then around eighth grade, I remember going to see my brother play in the Grammy band. You were in high school. And I just remember seeing him like with all his friends playing music. And I was kind of like, oh, I guess this is sort of cool. I must have been in seventh or eighth grade. Uh-huh. So at that point, I gave in. And, Kyle can tell his own story, but I'll just say for a long time, we all thought there was no hope for this young man, and it was okay. He just wasn't very good at music, and there was nothing wrong with that, and maybe he'd do something else, and like, poor little guy, you'll be fine. And now we're like, we don't understand how his brain works. He's on such a different level, so...
That's a nice compliment from your sister, I guess.
Yeah, well, when I was four, I started violin, and we all started violin and piano when we were very young. So I did a couple years of violin and a couple years of piano, but didn't practice either of them very much and didn't like them that much. So I mostly just liked playing video games, and I was really into that. But it wasn't until I started playing trumpet in elementary school band that I got really excited about it. We were doing some jazz, and then going to Stanley Middle School, where our dad taught, was the really big impetus for me to get really into music. But our whole lives, we always had, as my dad was saying, friends and family and students of our parents who were coming in and making music in the house. And there was music playing all the time. I remember the tapes that we would listen to in the car or at home. So we had it around us all the time. It was very easy to develop musical skill because we had developed our ears from such a young age. And that's often the hardest thing for people, is to figure out how to connect what they're hearing with what they're trying to play.
I see. Okay. Well, that's so cool. Well, you can hear more of this music tomorrow night. It is Holiday Jazz and Classics. It's featuring Kyle Athade, Eddie Barbash, more Athades, the more Athades than you can handle. Plus, we have some local talent in there. Taylor Dallas Vidic, Franz Felko will be there, and more. It's all in support of the third annual Juno Jazz Fest happening later this winter in February. For more information, you can go to junojazzandclassics.org. You can also find out more about Kyle Athade at kyleathadedanceparty.com, I believe, right?
Yep.
Okay, and is there anywhere we follow you to? Are you guys on Instagram? Where do you?
No, Lafayette Summer Music Workshop is what I run in the summer, and Kyle's the, you know, the curriculum director.
Excellent.
And Ellie, I don't know, where did we find you?
Southeast Alaska, apparently.
Hopefully, yes, and I guess I'm on the internet. like all of us.
You're my on the internet.
My super inventive Instagram handle is just Eliana Bassist. So
I love it. Thank you so much, Taylor. Thank you so much, Ellie. Thank you so much, Kyle, Bob, Papa, as we like to say. I really appreciate y'all being here on Juno Afternoon. It was fantastic. Going to the cheese and break a leg tomorrow.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Here's a little bit more of Eddie and Kyle. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. The warmth of the holidays is here, even as these temperatures dip into the negative. They're going to dip into the negative. It's a perfect time to give back, and St. Vincent de Paul's Adopt a Family program is one way you can do that this holiday season. I am joined in the studio now to talk about that and some other stuff, and like extended thrift store hours for the holiday season, I guess.
Yes.
Is gonna be coming on. But I have Jennifer Skinner, Executive Director of St. Vincent de Paul. Gunathchish Wasiti, how are you?
Good, thank you for having us.
I'm so happy that you're here. And then I have, I guess, new Deputy Director,
that's
Molly
right.
Carr, is in the house as well. Gunathchish, Molly, how are you?
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Congratulations on the position.
Thank you. Very excited.
So let's talk about that for a second. How did you end up working in this position as the Deputy Director? What brought you to St. Vincent de Paul?
The love for the community and what their mission is. I've been working with St. Vincent de Paul for approximately 3.5 years in a navigator's position.
Okay.
Helping individuals find stable housing.
I love that. Jennifer, hiring from within.
Yeah.
love it. That's so cool. So you'd already been working there.
Part-time.
As a navigator, which I know is one of the positions that helps folks figure out where to go next and all that kind of stuff. And then did Jennifer just like fishing reel you and be like, hey, Molly, I've got this potential position. What do you think?
She pretty much did. Yeah.
It was like you were there.
It's what?
It's like you were there.
It's like you. So, Jennifer, what was it about Molly that said, hey, I want her as the deputy director?
Oh, she has so many endearing qualities, her work ethic, her care for the folks that we support, her ability to problem solve and collaborate with other agencies, and her understanding of the populations that we work with and how to resource connect. I mean, there's just so many wonderful abilities that Molly has. And so I feel like the sky's the limit as our little dynamic duo over here. So I'm really excited to see what we can do to bring wellness and housing and all the needs to our community, meet all those needs.
So how long have you been in this position, Molly?
2 months.
2 months. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So, Jennifer, I want to ask you because, you know, it is cold outside. This is unbelievably cold and windy. And how are you seeing, how's that affecting the folks that you help?
It's cold, and no one wants to go anywhere, including us, right? I mean, I'd just much rather be on my couch with a book and a blanket. So, you know, we recognize that, you know, getting up and leaving, like, at the warming shelter super early in the morning, it's not ideal. So, we've worked hard to manage this last cold snap and have 24-hour coverage, but it's not a sustainable program in that respect. The evening coverage is covered, but we have staff that need breaks, and so we don't bump up staffing. It's just folks like Molly and myself who would go in, and some with the help of many wonderful volunteers who signed up throughout the community. We had people from Search and other nonprofit agencies step in and help us cover those shifts. But in collaboration, we were able to meet with the Glory Hall, and you know, the Glory Hall had some extra work done in their building and felt like they could reopen day services, and so they're doing a fantastic job serving the folks that we all work with during the day so that we can support them in the evening.
I see. Okay.
It takes a village, quite literally, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can't even imagine to be stuck outside, you know, so the warming shelters and the work that you do is so valuable and important to our community. So let's talk a little bit about Adopt a Family. This is an interesting program, a really cool program that people can get involved with. And tell me a little bit about it. Who's going to tell me? Is it you, Molly?
I think the program began probably in the late 90s here in Juneau, and we continue to serve families every year. We had about 100 families sign up, which entailed 260 children. Currently, we have about 65 families adopted, which equated to about 167 children. We still have 35 families that need to be adopted, which is about 93 children. So,
and what would you do if I want to adopt a family? What does that mean?
So that means you get a hold of our executive volunteer, and you can reach him through info@svdpjuno.org, or you can call our office at 907-789-5535. Inquire within. But basically, you come to our campus on Teal Street, and you can review a few of our applicants for adoptable families that are still available, make your selection, and then you go buy all the fun gifts. That's the best part, right? playing that role and going and getting all the goodies, and then we prefer that they come wrapped, but we do have wrapping services if wrapping is a little bit too much for someone and like just not the area they want to focus on. That's absolutely okay. You can bring them wrapped or unwrapped to our community room, and it's a winter wonderland inside, so it's extra special. So when the families do come to pick up their presents, it adds that extra layer of holiday and joy and cheer. It is completely decked out inside, so it's really a fun event for everyone.
That's special. And so do the families and the children, do they make like a little wish list, and that's part of what you're looking at, is like, so you can choose like what your level of comfort might be in terms of what you can afford to
right.
help adopt a family. You're basically saying, hey, I can help out at this level. Let me find a family that fits that. And then you're going, and it's sort of like, it's reminding me of, you know, when you used to, I'm sure there's still places that do this where there's, you know, a bin and you throw a toy in there,
right?
You wrap a toy in there while you're shopping. But this is a little bit more direct. You actually get to sort of see the impact a little bit. You feel the impact. You don't necessarily meet the family, but you get to know that the child that you saw in the application is getting whatever they wished for that holiday.
Right. There, it's the ability to make a wish come true, right? And
yeah.
So it's really a beautiful process all the way around for the giver and the receiver. You know, we often see the larger families are the ones that don't get adopted because that's a pretty big financial commitment.
Mm-hmm.
We do everything within our power to meet those needs, even mm-hmm. if that means tapping into some of our aid reserves to do so, we will. We also have some community partners this year doing a game drive for us. So shout out to Flying Squirrel for raising awareness and bringing that Christmas joy to their customers and giving them the chance to give back as well. They are collecting 4 games for us, and we'll be turning them in. And so we kind of piece it together if we have some remaining families that go without. We never let anyone go without is basically the point.
Right. Nobody goes unadopted necessarily.
Yeah, basically.
Right?
Yeah, we'll do everything within our power to meet those needs.
But there's 35 families that are still needing adoption.
Yeah.
And of course, you can call 789-5535. And you're asking for, who are you asking for if when you call? Is anybody can direct you to the area? You can just say, hey, I'm wanting to adopt a family.
Yeah. How do I adopt a family? And they will get them connected with the right person.
Or shoot an email over. Although email, you know, it's Christmas is like a week away. It's coming pretty soon. info@svdpjuno.org.
Correct. And we have some, our community center hours are extended due to the holiday and pickups and all of that. So that's kind of important information. So we are open Monday through Friday right now, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday will be 10 to 7 p.m., 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And Sunday will be there 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And then this Friday, we'll be staying open until 8 because that's when a lot of families like to drop off their gifts is this Friday.
This Friday?
Yeah.
Okay, great. That's excellent. And then before we run out of time, I want to make sure we talk about the extended thrift store hours. Of course, we all know, many people are donating to the thrift store Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And probably donating a lot this time of year. But you can also shop there for things that you might want to get for your family. And so you're staying open longer? Or tell me the hours of what you're doing for that.
We're open Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 6 p.m.
Okay.
And we will be closed on Christmas Eve this year.
Okay. So the whole day?
The whole day.
The whole day. Okay. So that staff can go home and enjoy their family as well.
Yeah.
But yes, Tuesday, 11 to 6, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Excellent. So you can get out and get your shopping in there. There's actually something I need to come and get there because I saw it. My partner, she saw it in the store, and I said, don't get it. I don't need it. And then I really need it, so I need to get over there.
You better hurry up.
Before somebody grabs it.
And that's not just for the holiday season, just so we're clear. We are keeping those hours.
Oh, you're keeping those hours.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is not just for now. This is you opening the store a little bit more.
Yeah, our busiest time of the day is the evening, and we wanted to meet the community's needs by staying open a little bit later and giving people the opportunity to get their shopping needs met.
That's so fantastic. Well, Molly, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I look forward to having you on the program much more to talk about other future programs that are coming up. It's been great to have Jennifer on here a few times already in your new role because you've been doing it for like
five, six months now. Yeah.
So all new world over there at St. Vincent de Paul's.
We're just shaking it up like a snow globe.
I love that. You can find them at svdpjuno.org. Go adopt a family this holiday season.
Please. Thank you.
Gwyneth Cheesh, I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Don't forget that this Friday is our special holiday episode with you in the audience. Friday at 3 o'clock, come down for some cool, awesome performances. Arrive by 2:45. That's it for Juno Afternoon. Gwyneth Cheesh, I'm Boston Christopher. Have a wonderful and warm Wednesday, Juno evening.